Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown, and my co-host, Dr. Jerome Hyler. Today is part four of Why Liberal Leaders Lie. Welcome, Dr. Hyler. How are you?
I'm very good today, Chauncey. Glad to be on again.
Thank you. We've been saying that our liberal progressive leaders are not interested in truth or justice. That's the truth the Kavanaugh's hearing and long-running Russian collusion hoax confirm. In our previous shows, you gave real examples of the lies, envisions, and hypocrisies that shows how dishonest the political left is willing to be. Over and over, their dishonest claims and charges are exposed. If our listeners care to listen to our prior shows, please, to get caught up, we have our podcast that you can listen to get caught up to why liberal leaders lie. Many respected voices have warned that the left just wants to get more and more power in their hands, and not for any good or noble purpose. So what motivates such malice? How can we account for this kind of lifestyle and those who just go along to get along? How do they not seek the kind of world their ever louder demands for ever more intrusive public policies will eventually create? How can educated men and women not know of the hardship and suffering of such policies?
Well, first, let me say I understand how hard it is for the average American to imagine that there are men and women amongst us who itch to trade in liberty and equality in order to gain the power to reduce others under absolute despotism, as Jefferson said in the Declaration, what in the 20th century turned into totalitarian tyranny. So here's an explanation I'd like to offer that can account for what Friedrich Nietzsche famously called the will to power. I believe it can explain the kinds of policies the left calls for, the kind of characters that join their ranks, and the reason they lie and are as dishonest as they are. In fact, this theory further confirms the founder's own fatal estimate of human nature.
That worldview was carefully described in last week's show, right? It was their fear of the age-old and awful influence of power on human affairs. It's part of the patriarch's worldview that says has never been sufficiently noticed or appreciated. Listeners, if you haven't yet heard the discussion, replay the April 23rd podcast of Why Liberals Either Lie. It's entitled The Road to Serfdom.
Of course, not every professed progressive is consciously out to reduce mankind under his or her absolute control. But all who adopt the left's ideology and go along with their program, however unwittingly, should be expected to foresee the sorry world he or she is busy helping to construct. Let's look at this program in toto. It's not breaking news to announce that today's university professors, elected representatives, media opinion makers, and student activists nationwide see no reason not to entrust government with ever-expanding powers, to imbue ever more active public institutions with the power to tax and compel compliance. But it's always for a compassionate cause, we are assured. What's wrong with wanting to relieve the real hardship so many Americans now face, some saddled with student loan debt, others having to pay off impossible medical bills, and still others lacking a living wage, a job, or guaranteed annual income? The left sees so much more good governments can do to relieve suffering. And who could be against that?
Doctor, so how would you describe the progressive generally? And how do their policies promote what you call this will to power?
The progressives, in my opinion, are neither sincere nor compassionate in their designs. They don't want what they say they want. They want power. Why else spread their views, not with logical persuasion, but with a pitiless suppression of free thought and expression? The tyrant's toolkit contains many implements, Chauncey, ever popular campus speech codes, thought monitors enforcing politically correct canards by bullying and harassing suspected quote-unquote dissenters and locking conservative voices out of the country's colleges and the students' range of hearing. It's a dirty business, Chauncey, this business of controlling human thought. Honest people, good people, don't do it.
Okay, doctor, I guess it's time to you share your theory about power with our audience. And please, explain why our listeners should accept it.
Okay, first, it's not my theory. I didn't come up with it. It was very vividly portrayed in Ayn Rand's novel, The Fountainhead. By story's end, Rand's hero, Howard Roark, reaches a vital insight about human nature. I'll quote him shortly, but first let me describe that theory in my own words. I'll begin by retracing some ground we've previously covered in these interviews. We have to remember how honesty and dishonesty play themselves out. Those who prize honesty and seek the truth and don't pretend that what is isn't, or that what isn't is, are the honest people. They know how important it is to see reality as it really is. And why is that? Well, ask yourself, how can we expect to deal with the world effectively and solve life's unavoidable problems if we won't even see things for what they are? Look at what honesty in this sense can accomplish. The guy or gal who can install a complex central climate control system, discover what's wrong with your car and make the needed repair, diagnose a serious mental condition and treat it successfully, discover a miraculous cure for some wretched disease, or invent an invaluable labor-saving gadget. In other words, the men and women who make America work know they must understand the way things really are to really get things done. Thankfully, that describes the vast bulk of Americans.
Professor, what do they all have in common? How would you describe that kind of person? What would you say about the kind of person who doesn't prize honesty and fairness?
Those are the real questions. Those who look reality squarely in the face discover the way things work and know what to do when they stop working. They've learned a lot. They put their learning to use and look forward to learning even more. Reality is their focus and interest. Then there is a very different individual, and here's where the theory of power comes in. This type is focused not on reality, but on other people. He wants to be thought great, or important, or rich, or powerful in other people's eyes. He wants to be loved by others, or feared by others, or he may be a malcontent, jealous and covetous of what others have. He may blame others, or the world, for leaving him with so little. He's inwardly seething over being denied the respect or status or higher position or wealth that should have been his, and he wants to get even. Now, this type often compensates by seeking power over his quote-unquote tormentors. He'd even the score by gaining control over others. He says, in effect, if I can bend others to my will, be their master, and have them for my servants, then I'll have what I need and deserve. The most grandiose among them simply believe, quote, it's my turn to rule the world, unquote.
Mm.
This other-directed individual can serve all of these needs by winning elections and holding public office. There's so much elected and appointed public servants can give to and get from others, both spiritually and materially. Now, since it's a successful lawyer, they're all accustomed to passionately presenting whatever spin best serves their client's present interests. We talked about that in part one. And since they now have themselves for clients, they're free to present whatever take on reality may suit their immediate purposes. In college, they learned that there are no universal truths. There's only opinion. As a pin worn by congressional staffers proclaims, reality is negotiable. Everything is nothing but one big bargain. So here's how the hero of Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead expressed it. Quote, "It's what I couldn't understand about people for a long time. They have no self. They live within others. They live secondhand." Well, we ask, what for? What's their aim? Quote, "Greatness in other people's eyes, fame, admiration, envy, acceptance, all that which comes from others. Others dictate his convictions, which he does not hold, but he was satisfied that others believed he held. Others were his motive power and his prime concern. He didn't want to be great, but to be thought great. He borrowed from others in order to make an impression on others. Look at them. The man who cheats and lies but preserves a respectable front. He knows himself to be dishonest, but others think he's honest, and he derives his self-respect from that. Secondhand. He knows himself to be mediocre, but he's great in the eyes of others, and that's what counts. They have no concern for facts, ideas, work. They're concerned only with people. They don't ask, is this true? They ask, is this what others think is true? Or is this what others expect me to think as true? Not to judge, but to repeat. Not to do, but to give the impression of doing. Not creation, but show. Not merit, but pull. That's where the dishonesty leads to unfairness and injustice. Secondhanders have no sense of reality. Their reality is not within them, but somewhere in that space which divides one human body from another. Opinion without a rational process. You can't reason with him. He's not open to reason. You can't even speak to him. He can't hear you. Now, not everybody gravitates toward government for the sake of power. Many rush there to get, quote unquote, paid, so to speak. American politics is where entitlement enthusiasts and counterfeit capitalists go to get special benefits and privileges at their neighbor's expense, and they don't mind doing so. Counterfeit capitalists look to avoid the market risks that real capitalists are willing to accept. Entitlement enthusiasts want free goodies or the secure, good-paying administrative jobs the welfare state creates. They all want to offer more and more to the voters at large because they know that's how to hold on to power and climb up the ladder of political success. It's the theory that the framers had about human nature. From Aristotle to the founders of our own country, men spoke of a cycle of corruption and decay that overtakes all once free societies. It is most succinctly expressed in a certain quotation. I hope our listeners will take heed of this and realize its significance. This is the quotation. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves money from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public, from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy. Try a $220 trillion debt that our government has rung up over the decades, and always followed by dictatorship. A democracy will collapse under the weight of loose fiscal policy, becoming eventually a dictatorship. Nations progress then through the following sequence. This is the cycle of corruption and decay best explained in everything that I have read. So, civilizations, societies, nations go from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance. And we are one great example of that. From abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to complacency, from complacency to apathy, and here we are today. From apathy to dependency, and here we are today. And from dependency back into bondage. But all is not lost. Men and civilizations have free will. There is still time to reverse the current trends and prevent the demise of individual liberty in America. It only requires that our forgotten men and women, the good people who went to the polls in 2016 and put Donald Trump in the presidency, it only requires that they get engaged and enraged in the political process once more, and above all, informed about what is really going on in this country. As I first said way back in 1776, in 1976, it wasn't around in 1776, I'm afraid. As I first said back in 1976, in writing my first book, the majority can no longer afford to remain silent. Now, a little further on, Chauncey, in these weekly broadcasts, I'll suggest the course of action I believe is best suited to preserve and restore a free and prosperous climate in this country, in which all future generations will find opportunity to be free and who have the opportunity to thrive and prosper.
Thank you, Dr. Hyler. For those that are listening, and this is U.S. National Politics, I'm your host, Chauncey Brown, and my co-host is Dr. Jerome Hyler, part four of Why Liberal Leaders Lie. Doctor, you gave a very good explanation on various fronts.
Chauncey,
if you don't mind, we have...
Chauncey, what I'd like... I'm sorry for interrupting. What I'd like to do... I see we have time. What I'd like to do is go back to an issue I discussed in our first conversation and bring in another fact that, again, in a different way and a very significant one, helps to explain why leaders lie and how they can defend to themselves, because they never admit that they're lying, but how they can defend and justify the lies that they tell. Now, as I said earlier in this conversation, they're lawyers, people in who go into politics, who work for the government, in the legislative body, people who become judges, people who become administrative offices. Their background is most often in the law. They were public defenders, they were prosecutors, they were defense attorneys, and so forth. And what they do as lawyers, well, when they walk through the courtroom door and the courtroom doors close, truth is out the window. As I said a little while ago, they're willing to present whatever spin will best serve their clients' interests, either to find them guilty or to find them innocent. Well, when they become politicians, they become their own clients, just as capable of spinning reality to accomplish their ends, to convince voters to vote for them, to convince their colleagues to and to convince the public through the media, through media interviews and all, that the kind of policies they recommend are the best ones for the country. That is what their job is. That's what they are trained to do as attorneys. In law school, notice that they have debating societies and debating classes in debate, and each student in the class is asked to take both sides of any particular issue that they're debating, and their job is to defend it equally. Why? Well, there is no truth. There is just winning their case and getting paid to win their case and building their reputation and then entering politics. But there's another thing that allows them to lie with impunity and justify it. And it's also something they learn in their philosophy classes, their sociology classes, economic classes in college where they're exposed to. And that is the idea that there really is no truth. It's part of Marxism. It is one of two parts of Karl Marx's theory of society that has come into the modern age. In other words, there are a lot of things that Marx believed that are not part of the left's ideology today. One part that has remained is the idea that capitalism and democracy are systems to exploit and oppress the many by the few, a system in which the few exploits and oppresses the many, and that is why they're demanding reparations today, and that is why that everyone is a victim. But there's a second factor that Marx bequeathed to modern societies, and that is that all ideologies, all purported truths are nothing of the sort. That what happens is the rulers of society propose principles, founding principles, so-called universal truths, and they are nothing but lies and excuses to justify injustice and pacify a gullible populace. In other words, the rulers say that all men are created equal and endowed by they created with certain inalienable rights, and so everyone should bow down and worship the American flag and our founding traditions and all. But for the Marxist or the modern-day leftist, that is a lie. All men, we don't believe that all men are created equal. We don't mean that everyone is endowed by their creator with certain alienable rights. We say that because if we can convince the population to believe it, then they will accept their chains and not rebel. They will be pacified, and the position the ruling class puts them in, the capitalist class puts them in, will be justified to justify injustice and pacify a gullible populace. And so the lesson is for all those on the left, they are free as a breeze to concoct any narrative that will help them gain the power they seek, because there is no truth. There is just the phony truth that the ruling class, the capitalist class, the 1% keeps promoting in order to justify their position as the 1% rulers of society. Well, they simply have a different set of principles. Not that one is superior to the other, not that any is true, but since the democracy and the proponents of capitalism, they are lying to justify the injustice that they inflict on the working classes, on the poor and everything. They just as well can lie, dissemble, be dishonest as they want also. So their law school training gives them the facility, the capacity to get away with storytelling. They get very good at it, very good at spin. The Marxist ideas from which they emerge tell them there's nothing ethically wrong with lying, since the capitalists lie and those who so-called defend the Constitution and those who defend traditional religion, they're lying as well. There are no truths. And so the leftists can spout their lies, and the only thing that matters, if they succeed in convincing the American people that their truths, quote unquote, are superior to the other truths, quote unquote, that the defenders of this country, of religion, of the Constitution, offer in opposition. That's pretty heavy.
Wow, that's
stuff.
Well said. Yeah, that's heavy.
But
yes,
I've
it is.
I've been through
that's...
college. Yeah, I've been through
I'm sorry,
college. I've been in the classroom where my professors have professed all of this garbage, and it explains why liberal leaders lie, what it is they are after with their lies, and how dishonest and insincere they can be very, very proudly and self-consciously. It's what has to be fought. And like I said, individuals and civilizations have free will. We can resist the trend, but it takes interest. It takes interest in politics, engagement in politics, and thankfully we have a president who is on the right path, knows the difference between right and wrong, good and bad, and we have a man in Donald Trump who we can support because he wants to loosen the burden that generations of leftists and liberals have saddled us with.
That was a lot, Dr. Heil. That was a very impactful and compacted breakdown of understanding why liberal leaders lie and how they misuse truth and power. That is very, very awesome. And also, it's very, very sad that we're at a crossroad in this country right now, that this message is important, that we promote the things that we're describing on the show if we're going to save this nation and save this country and save our liberties.
Yes. Chauncey, let me let our listeners know, now we've come to the end of this four-part series, Why Liberal Leaders Lie. And again, every listener is urged to look at the earlier podcasts to integrate all of the material that was presented, each of these four conversations that we've had. And let me finally just mention what we will be discussing next week, next Tuesday. I believe we'll be coming on a little earlier. But next week we're going to start a new conversation, and it's going by the title, Origins of the American Welfare State. And I'm going to ask, and I think answer the questions, when did we first go off track as a nation, and how did we get from that day to this?
Dr. Heiler, thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very, very much for an impactful show today. We look forward to having you on next week. This has been an awesome show. Awesome show.
Thank you very much,
and,
that means a lot.
Really, I mean, this has been extremely, I felt this, the impact of you expressing to us the importance of this information and the crossroads that we are in this country. And how important it is to get this message out. Thank you very much for sharing this information with us.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so.
This is U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We want to thank again Professor Dr. Jerome Heiler for being on the show and co-hosting us with us. Please join us next Tuesday for the Origins of the American Welfare State with Dr. Heiler. We thank you very much for tuning in. Have a great evening, and God bless you all.